Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Chris. I'm a pastor here at Compass. I'm glad that you've joined us today. We are in week two of a brand new message series called How to Be Rich. And let me explain what we wanted to talk about. There's all sorts of great information about out there about how to get rich, but there's not a lot of great resources on how to be rich once you are. And so last week when we kicked this whole deal off, we talked about some of the crazy things that rich people do. You know, like they have these closets that they walk into that are full of clothes, and like they'll look in and they'll say things like, I have nothing to wear. Rich people do that. It's nuts. They got tons of shoes. Rich people are crazy. And so someday when you are rich, I want you to be able to be rich well. Okay, I want you to be good at being rich. Now, one of the things that's really important to us at Compass, this is one of our core values. We talk about it all the time, is that we live open-handed. And living open-handed means that we are generous. And if there's anything that I want to be said of Compass, when people talk about Compass in our community, the one thing that I want to stand out more than anything else is that we are a generous church. That when people talk about those of us who are part of Compass, that they say, man, those people are generous. It's crazy how generous they are. Let me tell you a couple of the things that you support. Several months ago, we took on some brand new missionaries, and we support some missionaries who are going into the field right now and going to Eastern Europe, and they're going to be heading over there to spread the gospel there. We have just taken on something else that we're supporting. A couple of weeks ago, I was at a church conference. There's a couple church planters there. Now, Compass is a church plant. We've been around for a couple years, but we started from scratch. And these guys started a church in Greenville, Illinois, and they meet in a little tiny theater in downtown Greenville. It's like the one movie theater there in town. They're very similar to us. And they started last October. And they're talking about what they're doing. They're portable just like we are. So they have to have a setup team who's lugging stuff. I mean, props to our setup team. Those guys are amazing. But seriously. But they have to do the same. They've got setup teams loading in stage, loading sound, loading equipment. They got to create rooms for their kids because there's nothing permanent. You know, stuff can drop on the ground all the time, just like that. But so they're portable in exactly the same way we are. And as I was talking to them, they kind of begin to share where they are financially and share how they're doing. And when they basically, here's the thing, they spend about $2,500 a month just to do church, which is really cheap. The pastor and his wife, they don't draw a salary. They both work full-time jobs at other places. So they spend $2,500 a month just to do church. As a church, their income is probably closer to $1,500 a month. So they're on a very limited time for which they can continue going and pay their bills before they run out of everything that they raised to launch with. And so when I met them, we were talking to them, and I was like, it was like God just spoke to my heart. I was like, this is us. These people are us. And so they're telling their story, and they're saying like, yeah, it's this, and it's good, and it's rough, and it's awesome, and all these things. And I was like, well, that's great. How about if we just gave you guys like $100 a month? And okay, $100 a month, because again, we're not some mega church that's like, you know, sitting in our own amazing building on acres and acres of property. Like, I'm kind of embarrassed even to say $100 a month, really, because like, oh, I wish we could do more. It's just $100 a month. And they just got all like, they sort of look at each other and they get all teary-eyed and they're like, oh my gosh, that would be awesome. I didn't totally get that. And you know, they were high-fiving us and I was communicating back and forth with them. They sent me a booklet talking about where their expenses go and how much they have raised and what their income is. And basically, our $100 has more than doubled the amount of financial support that they get from all the other churches that are supporting them right now. And so here's the thing. We're a church that's knocking on the door of 200 people that meets in a portable movie theater. And I mean, we have our whole life ahead of us to grow and get huge and all these amazing things. We're not swimming in dough. We just do not have, I'm the only full-time paid staff member on our staff at all. And so we're not swimming in money. And yet God gave us the opportunity to bless and to be generous to someone who's doing the same thing that we're doing in Bloomington Normal. And I just, to me, that is what we should be all about. I want Compass to be the most generous church that people know of in our community, regardless of how much money we have. That's kind of what I want to talk about today, because sometimes we feel like we aren't very rich. In fact, let me just ask, raise your hand. Just if you can honestly say, you know what? I don't feel rich. Raise your hand if that's you. I don't feel rich. I look at my bank account. I look at what I have. I look at my little TV. You know, I look at my junky computer that's not an Apple, and I don't feel rich, right? I think honestly, most of us, if we were telling the truth, we would say we don't feel rich. most of us, in fact, I would say all of us at some point in our life would say that we don't feel rich. And that's a challenge, right? Because a lot of times the way we act with our finances and the way we act with our resources, we act in a certain way because we don't feel like we have enough. We don't feel rich. So check this out. This is just an interesting number. Number 40,000. Okay, $40,000. If you make $40,000 a year, you are in the top 1% of wealth earners in the entire world. Go ahead and bring that graphic up, guys. If you make $40,000 a year, you are in the top 1%. This is you. You're in the top 0.57% globally in the entire world. So you're that little guy up there and everyone else behind you. That's everyone else in the world. And here's what's crazy. In Bloomington Normal, our average income, just citywide, now most of you guys are like, psh, that ain't me. But our average income in Bloomington Normal is around $55,000 to $60,000 a year. So as a community, our community is in the top half of the top 1% of the wealthiest people in the entire world. The reality is that when we look at the money we make, we really are rich, but we don't feel like it. And if we don't feel like it, it might as well not be true. We don't feel rich. And so we can't be rich if we don't feel it. So, I mean, what's up with that? We are in the top 1% of the entire world. Actually, let me throw you out another statistic just to like paint a picture for you. If you took a $40,000 salary, if you took 1 month salary, okay, just what that person makes in 1 month, that salary could pay for the salary of 246 doctors in the African nation of Malawi. If you make $40,000 a year, 1 month of your pay could support 1 month's salary for 246 medical doctors in the African country of Malawi. We are rich, but we don't feel rich. And so, I mean, how do we deal with that? What's up with that? Why don't we feel rich? And I think to answer the question of why we don't feel rich, we got to look at those times that we have felt rich. You know, so even if you raised your hand and said, you know, I don't feel rich at all, there's been a time in your life where you did. There's two specific times in my life where I felt rich. Okay, the first one was when I got my first job. My first job was at Shoney's. I was a waiter at Shoney's. And so that means this. That means that I wore a pink button-down shirt. And I wore, you know, black slacks and those textbook black, you know, waiter shoes. And I wore an apron. And I waited tables at probably the most amazing restaurant to hit Bloomington Normal in the history of our community. But here's what was great. I mean, I would leave from a night at Shoney's. Even saying this feels dumb. My apron would be full of bills, okay? I would go home and my apron was stuffed with money. And I would go home, from work, and there'd be nights if I'd worked a weekend, I'd have $100 in cash just in my pocket. Now, it was kind of gross because it still smelled like a seafood buffet, but it was real. And my bedroom and my car reeked, just so you know. But it was real money. And man, I felt so rich. And the first Christmas that I had when I had all that money was the best. I went shopping for my family, and all of a sudden, for the first time, you know, I'm not doing that thing where I'm going to the dollar store and, you know, I'm buying that thing that's just closest to the checkout line and go, oh, maybe they'll like this. I mean, I'm going to the mall. I'm going to expensive places. I remember the coolest thing I got. I don't know why I remember this. There's no way my sister even remembers this, but I remember going and I bought my sister Jennifer this little, it was a little pool table. It would sit on just a regular little table and had the little key sticks and the little tiny balls. And I bought that. I'm like, this is awesome. I spent $30 on my sister for Christmas. I am rich. And the reason I felt rich was this. I had no other responsibilities. None. All I had to do was pay for gas in my car. I didn't have bills. I didn't have rent. And so all that money came in. It was mine. I didn't have any other expectations on me. And so I felt rich because I had this huge margin in my life. I had no expenses, nothing to have to pay towards. And so everything I had could collect. And I just had this massive amount of margin between the money I had and where it had to go. And so I felt rich because I had huge margin. Another time that I felt rich wasn't about how much I made, and it had more to do with a comparison to where I was. Terry and I went down to San Diego. We were considering moving there when I was, you know, trying to be a rock star, and we were considering, you know, putting down roots there and making it happen. And we decided we're just going to go to Tijuana for fun over the weekend. And we'd been down there on missions trips and stuff before, but this was the first time that we had gone down just as regular people, not working with the church. So we crossed the border and we ate tacos and hung out. And if you've ever been to one of those border cities or even any city in Mexico where there's any sort of tourism, you know that there's always those little kids running around and they're selling chiclets. Chiclet, chiclet. Chicklet, please. And they, man, they see you walking down the street. They see you coming a mile away and they swarm you like a hive of angry bees. And they are just on you, wanting you to buy all these little chicklets. And they're like a quarter each, but they're all over you. What's so amazing about these, the kids and these people around is that it's so obvious that they live in just poverty. I mean, I can look at their clothes and I can see shoes that I would have thrown out months and months and months ago, but it's this kid's only pair of shoes. I'm looking at their clothes and they probably haven't been washed in weeks and they're just filthy and dirty, but these are the clothes that these kids have. And I remember we were down there and seeing the people, seeing them through the lenses of, you know, thinking, hey, we're going to move to San Diego. And dude, here's the thing. Terry and I, we had just been married. We were broke. I mean, we were dirt poor, living in our first little, you know, apartment. We had nothing. And yet somehow going down to Tijuana, sitting in a taco restaurant, looking out on the city with all these little kids running up trying to sell us stuff, I realized, man, I have so much. I am rich. So a lot of times to feel rich is just a matter of perspective, isn't it? It's a matter of the margin that we have in our lives, the amount of money we have based on how it's got to be spent. It's, you know, it's perspective of, you know, where we are in direct comparison to real poverty. And sometimes we don't realize that we're rich because we don't feel rich. And so what I want to do today is I want to continue our How to Be Rich series. And now I want to talk to two groups of people. The first group we introduced last week, and that is people who you aren't rich yet, but you're going to be rich someday. And man, when you get rich, I want you to be prepared to be rich. And now we've got the second group. You are in this room and maybe you don't feel rich, but you're thinking about it and you're like, oh, crap, Chris, you're right. I'm rich. I don't want to admit it. But now I'm talking to you too. And so today I want to talk to you about how to be rich. So last week we talked about a letter that Paul wrote, the Apostle Paul. He was the guy who went around in the first century and he just started church after church after church all throughout the ancient world. And Paul had this young guy named Timothy who was his protege. And Paul took him on and he was teaching him how to do this and how to do it well. And really Paul looked at Timothy as like his adopted son in many ways. And so Paul's teaching Timothy how to lead people, how to start churches, and how to make this thing happen. And last week we looked at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17. It's the end of this letter that Paul has written to Timothy. And this is what Paul said. This is what we read last week. It says, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. So Paul sends a letter to Timothy. He's like, Timothy, listen, here's what you need to teach rich people, okay? The rich people who are in your church, the rich people around, this is what you need to teach them. You need to teach them not to be proud, not to be prideful or arrogant, and not to put their trust in money, but instead to put their trust in God. And what we talked about last week, kind of the main takeaway point was this, is that why put your trust in riches when you can put your trust in He who so richly provides? Why would you put your trust in riches when you can put your trust in the one who provides for you? And so that was our big takeaway last week. And Paul continues writing. We just looked at one verse. We're going to look at the very next verse in this letter that Paul wrote to Timothy today. And this is what Paul says immediately following in 1 Timothy 6, 18. He says this. He says, you know, tell rich people not to be proud. Tell them to put their trust in God, not money. And then he continues, tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. Let me break this down for you. One simple verse. This is what Paul says right out of the gate. He says, listen, these rich people who you're talking to, you need to tell them that they need to do good. They need to use their resources, use their money, use their riches to do good. They need to do good for each other. And so here we talk about this. We live open-handed as a church. That's our value. And that as people who are followers of Jesus, we live open-handed. And here's what happens. We get resources, right? And you may not be a Christian. And for you, it's just, you know, I work for my resources. I work for my money. And that's totally cool. I think some of this will still apply to you. And that's great. Maybe you're a follower of Jesus and you're like, I believe my resources come from God. But either way, here's what happens. Our resources get dropped into our hands. And what happens is this. The temptation is to consume what's in our hands. It's to consume our resources, to eat it, to devour it. It's for me. And what happens when you feed an appetite? What happens when you feed an appetite? It grows and it gets bigger. And so the more we take our resources, the more we take the things that either that God has put in our hands, the things that we earn, the more we consume them, the more our appetite grows. And then when stuff falls into our hands again, we consume it and we consume it. And pretty soon our trust and our hope migrates from God to the resources. And when our trust migrates and our trust is in our money and our resources, man, my hope is in that. What do? You begin to close your hands around it because I can't let go of it because my hope and my trust is in this resource. And Paul's saying, Timothy's saying, rich people, you got to know this. You got to use your resources to do good. You need to open up your hands and look at this and say, this is not just for me to consume. This is something I need to use to do good. That's where he starts. Then he continues and he says this, they should be rich in good works and generous to those in need. Now, I think this one is awesome. So what does a rich person have more of than a poor person? More money. So a rich person has more money. That's what it means to be rich. And then Paul says this, those who are rich in wealth and rich in money, they also need to be rich in good works and generous to others. This is what Paul's saying. He's saying, listen, if you have more money, then because of that, you need to do more good works. Because you have more of this, more is expected of you. How many of you guys read comic books when you were growing up? Any Spider-Man fans? Or you maybe seen any of the dozen Spider-Man movies? What does Uncle Ben tell Peter? He tells him this, with great power comes great what? Yeah, there you go. With comic book fans. With great power comes great responsibility. And that's what Paul is telling Timothy. He's saying, listen, if you have great power, the responsibility is bigger. Those who have extra responsibility. And here's the thing, you know, your superpower may not be that you can climb walls and shoot webs out of your hands, but your superpower is that you got a lot of money, okay? Some of us, our superpower is our resources, it's our wealth. And God is saying, listen, he's saying, if you have this power, if you have this blessing, if you have this resource that's greater than others, you need to use it to do good, you need to share it, and you need to be generous. You always need to be willing and ready to share. So this is what Paul tells Timothy. This is how he wants him to teach rich people. And what I want to do is I want to just peel this back a little bit. And I want to take a step back. And I want to see what Jesus has to say about this. Because the way the Bible works, this is what I love about reading the Bible, is that there's stories or there's things that are said in the Bible that are agreed with or complemented by other stories. And so Paul is not saying these things in a vacuum. Paul is saying these things as a follower of Jesus. And so let's look at what Jesus has to say about what this type of generosity looks like for those who are followers of him. So if you're a follower of Jesus, this is what generosity is supposed to look like. I'll just say an aside, if you're not a follower of Jesus, I'll just tell you this right now. Some of these principles are going to be valuable and important for you. So check this out. This is what happens. It's a story of Jesus. Jesus and his disciples are in the temple, a Jewish temple in Jerusalem. And this is what happened. Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple. And he watched as the crowds dropped in their money. And many rich people put in large amounts. So Jesus and his disciples are hanging out at the temple. Jesus would go there and he would teach and people would come and listen to him teach. You know, he and his disciples are on a coffee break right now probably. And they're sitting in an area of the temple where the collection box is. Now what they did back then was different than what we do nowadays. You know, nowadays in churches, you pass the plate, or for us, you pass the popcorn bucket. Really, that's just culturally easy. You know, it's just something easy to do. There's nothing magical or special about it. It's just kind of how we do it. But back then, what they did at the temple is they had this collection box or a bin that was close to an entrance. And when people would come in to worship or make sacrifices, they would drop in their offerings into that collection box. And that's just how it worked. And so Jesus and his disciples are sitting in a place where they can see everything that's going on. And Jesus is observing and he sees these rich people who are coming up. And the reason he knows they're rich is because he can see the amounts of money that they're dropping into this offering bucket. He can see the amounts of money that's going into this box. And it says that many rich people put in large amounts, which you would expect, right? You're rich, you have more, you should give more. Story continues. Then a poor widow came and dropped in 2 small coins. So this widow walks in, and here's the deal with widows back then. If you were a widow, you were really pretty bad off. You were probably some of the poorest of the poor because women didn't have a lot of rights. Women couldn't inherit. And so if you're a woman and your husband died, everything that he had would get passed on to his son or his closest son. If you didn't have a son, then all of his wealth would get passed on to his nearest male relative. And so if you were a widow and you didn't have a son who could inherit that and then take care of you, you were just on your own. You had nothing. It was difficult for women to work and find jobs back then because they were looked down on in that culture. And so if you were a widow, you were the poorest of the poor in ancient Jewish culture and society. And this widow walks up to the collection plate, and Jesus is observing. He's seen all these rich people drop in all of these big sums, and he sees this little woman walk up, and she just drops in just two little coins. Some other translations call it the widow's mite, the King James. Maybe you've heard this story, the widow's mite. Mite's not really a real word for a coin. That's kind of just King James translation. But if we look at the amount that this woman dropped in, this is how much the lady dropped into the collection plate. So these two coins, what she dropped is, I mean, they are less than pennies. I mean, it was almost next to nothing. She dropped in what was the equivalent of 1/128th of a day's wage. So, you know, let's assume that $40,000 is an average wage, you know, in Bloomington Normal for a year. She dropped in 1/128th of a day's wage. She dropped in, literally, it's 6 minutes of work. 6 minutes of your time sitting in a cubicle at State Farm, or 6 minutes is how much she dropped into that box because it's all that she had. Continues after she drops it in. Jesus, he sees this happening, and he calls his disciples. He's like, guys, come here. Guys, check this out. He said, I tell you the truth. This poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. He said, guys, look at this. Okay, you've seen all the rich people coming in, dropping big amounts of money in there, just stacks of cash. But this woman right here, okay, this widow who just dropped in two coins that could make literally no difference to anything because it's next to nothing. This woman, she gave more than all of the other contributions and all the other people who are giving contributions. Now, if you're one of Jesus' disciples, you got to be like, okay, Jesus, I don't totally follow this, okay? Because that guy dropped in like hundreds of dollars, and this woman dropped in two pennies. And so I'm not really tracking with you when you say that she dropped in, you know, a greater contribution. Because literally, the amount she gave can make no difference at all. I mean, you could take what she dropped in, you could multiply it times 100 and go buy yourself a can of Coke or something. There's just, what she dropped in is next to nothing. It can't be that her contributions are any bigger or any more. They've seen the large amounts that these rich people are dropping in. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if you know any rich people like to be seen doing good things, right? Publicity ain't bad. And so these guys are coming in with their big stacks of money and their big glorious robes and, you know, pulling their wallet out and, you know, doing something like this, you know, just in the grand gesture and being seen. And the disciples are like, yeah, but those guys have dropped in a lot. But Jesus continues. He explains. He elaborates. He says, listen, guys. He says, this woman has given more than all the others who are making contributions. And here's why. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus. But she, as poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on. Okay, in this passage is a generosity principle that really has the potential to revolutionize the way that you look at your resources, the way you look at your finances, and the way that God really looks at our finances and our relationship to money. And here's the thing. There were people who put in big stacks of money, large quantities, and there's this woman who put in next to nothing. But the difference was this. The difference was in the percentages. The difference was in the percentage. These rich people, they put in a lot of money. They put in a lot that could make a huge difference. But based on how much they had, based on how much they made, what they gave was just a small percentage of the surplus of what they earned. It was way more than this woman gave, just on a numbers-to-numbers basis. But on a percentage basis, it was considerably less. And then this woman over here, she drops in all that she has, these two tiny little coins. She's totally broke. She has nothing. And yet what she puts in from a percentage basis is so much greater than what the rich people had given. So here's the takeaway principle, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to elaborate on it, because some of you guys are going to go, okay, wait a minute, what? I'm not sure about this. But this is the takeaway today, and that's this. God is moved by percentages, not sums. God is moved by percentages, not sums. So here's the deal. For some of us, let's say I was like, you know what, guys, we're going to take up a special offering right now. We want to help remodel the home of a grandmother who has taken her grandkids in, and she's a foster parent for those kids, and she has nothing. And we want to help her remodel her home. And we pass that bucket around. There's going to be some people in this room, and you're going to be like, you know what? I should probably write a $100 check. $100, is that good round number? It feels substantial. It feels big. And you're going to drop that check in. There may be people in this room who are like, you could do even more than that. Maybe your average like 50, 25 bucks, but you can feel good about the quantity you put in. There's going to be someone in this room who reaches into their pocket and here's what happens, right? You hear the buckets going around and you hear the sound of paper dropping in that. That, you know, that's a great sound. But then there's always that one person, right? And you hear that like, because they drop in like 8 coins. And then maybe after the coins hit, you hear this, which is just their pocket lint hitting the bottom of the bucket. There's someone who's going to drop in the 8 coins that they have in their pocket. And here's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, look, some of you guys wrote $100 checks. Some of you wrote more. Some wrote $50 checks, $25 checks. And hey, that money's great. I'm glad that you're giving. I'm glad that you're living open-handed. But here's what I want you to know. That person who sat in the back, who dropped in 85 cents that was in their pocket, that they gave way more than those of you who wrote the big checks. And the reason is because they had nothing else. That's all they had. And he's saying this, saying, you know what, it's easy to write a $100 check when you're sitting on, you know, $50,000 in savings. I just made that number up. I have no idea what that is. But it's easy to write a check for some of us because we're giving out of the surplus of what we have, where for others, it's we're giving so much less, but it's so much more on a percentage basis. Now, here's the thing. I think this happens because, you know, and I think we can be realistic in that when people who don't have a lot of money, they don't put their hope in money. They don't trust it. If you don't have a lot of money, you know, giving a dollar, giving $5, giving $10 to somebody, it's like, what difference does it make? You know, it's, I'm broke. I've got nothing. But what happens is you start to make more, and as you start to, you know, move up in your career, you start to make more money from college, whatever it is, as you start to make more, you start to feel like, okay, wait a minute. I've got enough of this and I need to look out for it because I know what it's like to not have it. And now that I have it, I don't ever want to go back to that. And so the people who are living over here with just the 85 cents in their pocket, and that's all they have, it's like, okay, well, I guess I won't eat a Twinkie for lunch today. No big deal. But for those of us on the other side, it's like, well, I really wanted to take the kids out to Red Lobster today. And you know what? I can probably still do that if I just write 50 instead of 150, or I can still do this. And you start to think, man, I don't ever want to be that again. And I've got to create my margin. I've got to create that sense of feeling rich. And the way we create that sense of feeling rich is to hold on and to cling to something and not let it go. And here's the thing. We feel generous because the number that we dropped in feels big. And so we feel like we gave a lot. But Jesus is saying this, God is not moved by your sums. God is moved by percentages. God is moved by the percentage that you're being generous with, not the sums that you're adding up and giving, no matter how big that they can be. So let me break this down. Let's just get practical for a second, okay? I'm gonna ask you guys a question. Most of you don't know the answer to this, okay? Here's the question. How many of you know what percentage of your income you live on? How many of you know what percentage of your income you actually live on? I mean, that's a weird question because we don't think about that, right? Here's what we do. We get our money, and if you have a budget, which is awesome, I encourage you to have one, what we do is we plug in all of our numbers, 100%, and then we make a budget based on that 100%, right? That's how we do it. But here's what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, I want you to be percentage givers. I want you to think about how you give, your generosity in terms of percentages. And so what Jesus would challenge is say, what are you giving? How do you know how much that you're being generous with? And the way you know is because you know the percentage that you live on. So let me break it down for you. This is an easy way to look at percentage living and percentage giving. And this is just a great practical way. One way is to say, I have 100% of my money, right? And it's a 10-10-80 principle. And it says this, I'm going to take 10% of what I earn, and I'm going to give it. I'm going to be generous with it. I'm going to take 10% of what I earn, I'm going to save it, and I'm going to live on the 80%. I'm going to take that 80, and that's what I'm going to live on. That's how I'm going to feed myself. That's how I'm going to buy clothes. And it's a whole new way of approaching this, because instead of saying I live on 100 and then trying to you know, skimp out or pull aside whatever we can extra, we're planning. I'm budgeting. I'm only going to live on 80% of my income because I'm setting a margin here so that I can give a percentage, and percentages are what God cares about, not sums. And here's what's amazing. We saw the video with Kent and Jenny talking about their story. They lived on 100%. You know, in their words, they lived on 100% of their income. And while they did, they struggled. They struggled. They had debt. They were broke. They had bills that they were struggling to pay. And it got to the point where they said, something has to change. And so they put everything on a piece of paper and they said, you know what? Here's the thing. Before we take a single step further, we're going to do this. We're going to make a decision now that we're going to take 10% and we're not going to live on it. We're going to give it. Before we do anything else, we're going to cut this 10% off. It doesn't get touched. It doesn't get consumed. It doesn't get eaten. We're going to put it aside and we're going to be generous with it. And their story is the same as my story because Terry and I have walked this as well. And the same as many of you who have made this jump to percentage giving, their story is this, is that God could do more with the 90 or the 80% that you choose to live on if you're generous with the rest than he ever could with the 100% that you're hoarding for yourself. God can do more with less than you can do on your own with more because God's heart is moved by our percentages. Now, Terry, in our life, we started that 10% is kind of that tie that is the biblical word for it. But percentage giving, we started with 10% is just our baseline. But there have been times in our lives where we've been challenged and stretched by God to go beyond that. And so we have always bounced around between 20 sometimes and 10% as far as where we are in our generosity. But man, I can tell you this, when we made the commitment to become percentage givers, when we made the commitment to have a plan to be generous, not just to be accidentally generous, not just to give out of our surplus, not just to give when we have a bonus or a tax return, but a real plan that says in my life, this percentage of what I have is going to be given away no matter what. Whether I make $1 million or whether I make $50, this percentage is going to be given. When we did that, God did amazing things in our lives. He did amazing things in our finances. And God wants to do that in your life too. And listen, you may not be a follower of Jesus this morning. And so the spiritual aspects of this, you know, you're like, okay, Chris, I'm not sure about that. But listen, good common sense would say this. Say, listen, generosity is important. It makes you a better person. It makes you a better human being, supporting and giving and encouraging others with the riches. Because with great power, with great wealth, comes great responsibility. I heard a story at that same conference that I met the church planters from the Bridge Church in Greenville. There was a guy who got up to speak from Rockford First. That's the church where our ladies are going to go to the original women's conference. And he was talking about how they felt this kind of burden to start a church in a prison. Now, he's not talking about a prison ministry where, you know, they send a team in there. They already had that. They send teams of people to a prison and they would do services for some of the prisoners there. And then they would leave. Now, he felt moved. He's like, no, here's what we want. We're going to start a prison church. And it's like, if we're going to do this, then we're going to invest in this the same way we would invest in any church that we were starting. And so he prayed about it. He thought about it. And he went before his church and he said, listen, guys, here's the thing. We want to get them the right equipment. We want to get them the right technology. We want to get them the right video screens and all that stuff. And he said, he challenged his church to raise $100,000 to start a church in a prison, which is very cool. I mean, really exciting ministry stuff that they're doing. And you know what's amazing is their church, it resonated with them and they gave generously. And so they raised the funds to do that. But he told the story of an envelope that came in one day. And the envelope came into the office and it got sent to the bookkeeper. And when it was opened up, it was an envelope from the prison where they did their prison ministry. One of the prisoners there had heard about the fact that they were starting a church. And he had his prison job. And I don't know if you know this, but if you can work at prison when you're in prison there and you get paid literally like pennies on the dollar, what a fair salary would be, but it gives you the opportunity to do something. So you might make a dollar a day. This envelope opens up and out of that envelope dumped 13 cents. 13 cents sent in from a prisoner at the prison where they were going to start the church, a little note saying this is, you know, to support the church that you're doing. And this is what the pastor of Rockford First said. He said this. He said that 13 cents was the biggest gift that was sent to us to start the church in that prison. It was by far the biggest, most powerful, and most important gift that we received. And the reason was this, is that prisoner gave everything he had. I'm sure there were people in that church who wrote $1,300 checks. And that money went a long way. And listen, you know, we don't want to discourage generosity, but the principle of percentage giving is this. The prisoner who gives 13 cents is giving something that honors and pleases God way more than someone who gives 1,300 out of the surplus of what they have, a small percentage of what they have. God is moved by our percentages and not sums. Here's what is great about this, and I hope that this is very freeing for many of us, because many of us don't feel rich. No matter how much we have, we don't feel it. I mean, we don't feel rich at all. We know this, though, is that when you live with margin, margin creates the feeling that you're rich. Percentage living creates a sense of margin because you know, hey, this is my line. This is where I'm cutting it off. And the margin here, the rest that I have, I don't have to stress out and worry about being able to help someone with my generosity. I don't have to worry about, you know, taking part in One Day to Feed the World because I'm so stressed out about it anymore, because you know, this is my generosity. This is my margin. This is how I give. And then all of a sudden, when you start to live with margin, when you start to live with a 10-10-80 rule, there's space. And whether you make $20,000 a year or $200,000 a year, the margin creates the feeling that, oh my gosh, I have so much. God has given me so much. And now I can live with my hands open and I can allow what's in there to be poured out to help and to do good in the lives of others. And then God can pour more in and more in. Here's the thing. You can add up all that you've ever given and you can compare it to somebody else, right? You could go through your QuickBooks and you could just say, let's look at my charitable contributions. And then let's add that up with my church contributions. And you could add that up into a stack of bills and you could compare it to someone else. And you can go, wow, I mean, I gave hundreds and hundreds and thousands more dollars than that person gave. And God, look how generous I've been. God, look at just the number. Look at the dollar, the number that comes after the dollar sign of how generous that I have been in my life. And look at compared to these people, God, I have given so much. And you know what? God's not going to be impressed by the number with the dollar sign in front of it, because God's moved by the number with the percent sign behind it. And so my challenge to you as a church, if we are going to be generous, if we are going to live open-handed, we have to be deliberate about it. We have to make a choice to do it. And I would challenge you and I encourage you, be a percentage giver. Be a percentage giver. In fact, I'm going to roll this out as well today. I would encourage you this. If you are not a percentage giver, you know, if you are someone who you give when you feel, you know, led to, or you feel like you have money in your pocket to give, I would encourage you this. I would encourage you with your giving here at Compass. This is a challenge. I would encourage you to become a percentage giver. And I'm going to give you a 90-day tithing challenge. And that's this. If you commit yourself to say, you know what, I'm going to test God in this. I'm going to become a percentage giver for 90 days. Just try it. Just say, I'm going to cut a percentage. I'm going to cut 10% of my income and I'm going to give first and then I'll consume the rest. I'm going to do that for 90 days. I would challenge you to do that. At the end of 90 days, if God has not proven himself worthy, if God has not done more with the 90% that you've kept for yourself and then the 100 that you would normally keep for yourself, if God's not done more with the 90 than you could do with the 100, at the end of 90 days, we will give you all of that money back. Every penny. We'll give you a total refund. That's how deeply and passionately and powerfully we believe in the principles of percentage giving. And the thing is this, this is both for you and the people that you have the opportunity to bless. This is both for you and the people whose lives can be changed by the generosity that God's calling you to, that God's calling all of us to. So I want to challenge you, challenge all of us. Let's do good. Let's do good in the way that rich people should do good. That's how to be rich, is to do good with what you have. Let me pray for you. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much, Lord, that you've blessed us as your church. And I thank you so much that you've resourced us in the way that you have. God, you truly have done so much in our lives and so much for us. And Lord, we are humbled in acknowledging the fact, God, that all we have comes from you. And so Lord, our prayer is this. Our prayer is that you would help us to live with hands open. God, that what we hold on to, that what we have is yours to do with what you want. And Lord, I pray, Jesus, that as we begin to allow you to take what you want from us to bless others, Lord, that we would see that blessing happen in our lives in such a powerful and amazing way, in the same way it happened in Kent and Jenny's life, in the same way that it's happened in Terry and my life. And Lord, my prayer is this, is God, is that as you challenge and encourage us, God, to be percentage generous, to look at our lives, to look at our resources in terms of the not just the amounts that we give away, but the percentages that we give away, Father, that when we look at life in that way, Jesus, that it doesn't matter how much we make because the percentages are always the percentages, Jesus, and that we can live with both margin to feel rich and we can live knowing, God, that we are being rich well by doing good in the lives of others with our generosity. Lord, we thank you so much. And I pray, Lord, that you would stretch our faith, that you would grow us. And I pray for those who are willing to take part in the 90-day tithing challenge, Jesus. My prayer for them, Jesus, is that you would give them incredible and outrageous faith. And I pray, Jesus, that you would be there, God, where they take that first step, proving that you can be trusted, proving, God, that they can put their trust in the one who richly provides rather than the riches. Lord, we love you. And we pray all of this in your awesome and holy name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.